us with sojourn here at the Northeast Campus. It is found in the Gospel of Luke, chapter 23, verse 34. You don't have to look us up on the screen. Then said Jesus, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And they parted his raiment and cast lots. Then said Jesus, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And they parted his raiment and cast lots. Then said Jesus, Father, forgive. And that's what I want to talk about this Sunday morning, simply and succinctly. Father, forgive. On last Monday, June the 17th it was, the state, several areas of this country, paused to commemorate and even celebrate the lives of those 9 church members who were murdered on June 17th, 2015, after Bible study at the Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church in Charleston, South Carolina. For those of you who are South Carolinians, I'm sure that that event, maybe not the date, not the time, but for me, that date and that time will be forever etched and sketched in my brain, just like the assassination of MLK, the going down of the Discovery space shuttle. For many of you in your generation, the killing of JFK in Dallas. There's some moments in time, or 9/11, there's some moments and some dates in time that you won't forget. Mostly they are tragedies, and those dates and times and events are forever sketched in your brain and in your memory for the rest of your life. And on June 17th of 2015, a white neo-Nazi skinhead from Lexington, South Carolina, drove all the way to Charleston, South Carolina, hoping to start a race war. You know the story. He went to Emmanuel AME on Calhoun Street down in Charleston, South Carolina. Went to Bible study, sat through the entire Bible study. And after they broke for prayer service, he pulled out a gun and, beginning with Clemente Pinckney, the pastor of the church, killed 9 persons. 2 women survived. One and her granddaughter survived, or 3 women survived. And that's a sermon right there. The 3 women who survived. You get that when you get home. There's always women who left to tell the story. I don't know if it's because y'all talk too much, but God always leaves a remnant in the form of the feminine. Now unto him who can keep you from falling. Saying he always keeps a remnant in the form of the feminine to keep the story. Erica just said he can't trust us men. One of those women was left alive because Dylan had thought he had killed her. And I wish I was prophetic enough, and I wish I had a Pentecostal church to let somebody up here know the devil thought he had killed you too. But that ain't enough Pentecostal people in here. The devil thought he had you dead too. But anyone can look the devil straight in their face that you thought you had me now. But like silly, I'm just going to talk to my Pentecostal people right now. Just some holiness folk. Ain't nobody holiness out there, the Catholic folk out there, but there's some holiness folk already that thought you were dead, you were gone, that there was nothing worth value in you. But God, just like that woman was covering her grandchild, and Moses, she said, I put my grandchild's mouth to my chest, to my heart, so she could not say a word. I thought I'd smothered her to death, but I was holding her so tight so that that man thought that we were already dead. And I got a revelation right there. Sometimes when you think you can't breathe, when you think you can't move, God, it just help me, somebody. I thought I was
just going to talk today because there's just going to be a few of us. But sometimes God is smothering you, but he's really covering you. He thought they were dead and gone. But then he asked the other woman, have I shot you yet? And the woman said, no. I'm going to say, yeah, I'm dead. She said, no. He said, I'm going to let you live so you can tell the story. And there are a few of us in here who've been left alive so we can tell the story of a dead man that now lives again. I thought I had two more witnesses. I'll make the third one that you've been left alive to tell the story. Anybody know, Vaughn, you've been left alive to tell the story. Erica, you've been left alive to tell the story. Kills, you've been left alive to tell the story. Dakota, you've been left alive to tell the story. Leon, you've been left alive to tell the story. Marla, you've been left alive to tell the story. We know. She was left alive to tell the story. Well, on last Monday night, if you missed it because it wasn't advertised, I don't think very well, that there was a documentary called Emmanuel that was produced by Viola Davis. You know her, Oscar award-winning actress, and even Steph Curry from the Warriors, and a filmmaker who wrote a script called Emmanuel. It was only two nights, Monday night and Wednesday night. Last week, and initially it was just at one theater, and it oversold in one day, and so they moved it out to Sand Hills, and then Spotlight got it, and thank God for my brother Bishop E.J. Freeman, and had three theaters so people could see it on Monday and Wednesday night, and it told the story of what happened 4 years ago on that fretful Wednesday night. I will be honest with you, I went looking and expecting something else on that Monday night. Tonight, I sent bought tickets for our funeral home staff who worked that funeral. As you, many of you might remember, we had a seat at History because we were blessed to be able to handle the funeral arrangements for both Clemente Pinckney and Reverend Simmons. And so we were there with the president. We were there. We watched the whole thing. You know? So I was going there expecting one thing, expecting an expose on each one of the person's lives and expecting an expose on the history of the church. And it certainly was some information on both. But one of the things that the screenwriter and the producers had a focus on was on faith and forgiveness. The story really wasn't about Clemente Pinckney. The story really wasn't about Dylan Roof, even though they're woven into the story. The story really wasn't about historical significance of Emmanuel, even though you got and understood the historical significance of Emmanuel being the first AME church in South Carolina, and therefore the first AME church in the South. And we didn't hear too much about Morris Brown, and we did hear something about Denmark Vesey and the Denmark Vesey conspiracy, but we didn't hear much about Morris Brown, the founder of the church in 1816, who had gone up to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, to be ordained by Richard Allen himself. But the story was about faith and forgiveness. The movie begins with the daughter of Ethel Lance, one of the ladies who was killed. And her name is Nadine Collier. Nadine Collier talking about how she was moved at the bond hearing. At the bond hearing of Dylan Roof, did the judge allow each member of the family representative, each member, to speak directly to Dylan Roof by video? And it begins with Nadine Collier looking this white man in the face, and looking this skinhead in the face, looking this murderer in the face. And the first thing she says is, I forgive you. Tears streaming from her eyes. Pain still in her heart. But the first thing she uttered was, I forgive you. You have taken something very precious from me. I can never call her again. I can never hold her again. I can never talk to her again. You have taken something precious from me, but I forgive you, and may God have mercy. Somebody say mercy on your soul. And one after the other, after the other, after the other, each representative from each family told that white neo-Nazi skinhead, "We forgive you." One of the activists from the Black Lives Matter movement was interviewed for the documentary. He said, after they said, "I forgive you," it dismantled everything we wanted to do. One of the reasons that Charleston never had a riot, no buildings were downturned or burned down in Charleston, where you didn't see people pile into the streets like we saw in Illinois, Michael Ferguson, or in Florida with Trayvon, or Eric Garner. One of the reasons why you never saw the riots and all the things that happened in other places where young men and women had been killed at the hands of police and after other events is because the first thing that was uttered from Nadine Collier's mouth was, "I forgive you." Last Sunday, even before Monday night, last Sunday morning, the Father's Day, if you were here on last Sunday, there was a movement in this atmosphere. After Mark Childress powerfully preached and after we came together in prayer, I began to peer into their eyes and therefore into the souls of some of the young men of our church. And I saw anger. I saw malice. I saw emptiness. Sunday to apologize to them on behalf of their absent fathers. Many of them might know some of their stories, know they were being raised by a single mother. Some I did not find out till afterwards. But one of our members, just 10 years of age, came and held me at this altar and cried like a baby for 15 minutes and wouldn't let me go. Come to find out that his father hadn't spoken to him within 3 years. Father's yet alive in Atlanta, but has not spoken to him in 3 years. And I didn't know that, but the Spirit sometimes will let you on the other side of the story. And I apologize on behalf of their fathers for not being active in their lives. And I can't sugarcoat that pain. I can't make it easy by saying, again, you'd be a father for the mother, the fatherless, and a mother for the motherless, and all that sounds good. But sometimes you need God to manifest himself in the physical. And you need the physical reality of the invisible presence. I said you need the physical reality of the invisible presence. You need the physical presence of the invisible reality. You need someone to show up at the ball game, someone to show up at graduation, someone to show up at PTO. You need someone to call on your birthday. You need some kind of the physical aspect of what you know God can and will do. And it was very interesting for me spiritually in the spirit that day to say, "Father, forgive," and "I apologize," and "Please forgive us." And then that next day, watching this documentary that was about faith and forgiveness. Reminder of this passage here in the Gospel according to Luke, that when Jesus is hanging on that tree, when Jesus is hanging on that cross, as he is drenched in blood and pain, the first thing he does is not ask for something to drink. The first thing he does is not give the man access to paradise. The first thing he does is not be upset with God when he asks God, "Why have you forsaken me?" The first thing he does is say, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." I have been arguing for years that the reason why Jesus asked God to forgive them for they know not what they do is because he understood that he couldn't go any further in his life and in this testimony and say anything else until he said, "Father, forgive them." See, until you forgive someone, your hate, your grudge, your being upset is a handicap and an anchor on your life. You can't go any further in your destiny until you forgive those who have tried to kill you and hurt you. And you also got to understand that when you forgive somebody, it takes all their power from them. So, you know, people, some people try to intentionally hurt you. Even your spouse sometimes intentionally wants to hurt you. They will say things to get under your skin or on your nerve to intentionally hurt you. There are people on your job who know where your soft spot is. They know what ticks you off. They will intentionally hurt you. And sometimes you got to, even before they open up your mouth, say, I forgive you for what you think you're about to do, because you have no power over me. That's why you can't respond to every text. You can't respond to every Facebook post. You can't respond to everybody staring at you. You can't give people any more power because they think they have the power to control your emotions and how you think about yourself. You can't give nobody that much power over you to control how they think and how you think about yourself and how you're going to go in the way and the admonition of the Lord. And so sometimes you got to say, boo, keep it moving, because you can't do nothing to me. But you have tried. God already made it for my good. And what he does in this situation is he diffuses the situation. That activist from the black power movement said there was nothing we could do after that. He said after she said forgive and all those family members said we forgive them, there was no activism. There was no more anger. There was no more charge. There was no more reason for us to even galvanize the people to riot, to burn down stuff, and to march. After they did that, they calmed the sea. I'm here to tell somebody, if you want to calm your seas, if you want to get your peace back, I don't care if you call them, I don't care if you write them, if you text them, if you put it in the sand. Whoever you got some issues with right now, say, Father, forgive. Whoever you don't like, say, Father, forgive. Whoever you sitting on the other side of the church because you don't want to be near them, Father, forgive. That's why sometimes I hate it when people get divorced. When people get divorced, who go to our church, they leave the church. And I tell them, we got two sides. Four entrances. You don't come here because of them. You come here because of Jesus. And if you ain't got to see him, sit on the other side. Jesus has a personal conversation with himself. When he says, Father, forgive, he's actually saying, I forgive. Because the Word of God says that he and the Father are one. You see, that's why you can't tell nobody, tell them you're sorry. If I got to tell you to tell someone you're sorry, you ain't sorry. You're just repeating what I have told you to do. Now, I know as for our young children, it's a teaching lesson, but for us grown folk, you can't tell nobody, tell them you're sorry. If you were sorry, you would have already said you've already been convicted. And so telling somebody I'm sorry and asking for forgiveness starts with a personal conversation with yourself. Starts with a personal conversation with yourself. And then it is the posture of every Christian. Yes, it is a personal conversation, but it has to be the posture of every Christian. The posture of every Christian has to ask for forgiveness and then give forgiveness. You done heard it before, but I need to remind somebody. You've got to be able to ask for it and to give it. Don't you hate people who can joke and tease and talk junk about people all the time, but as soon as you say something about them, they get mad. Ain't nothing y'all say about me ever gonna bother me. I done heard it before. You ain't gonna offend me. And you, if you gonna be able to dish it, you got to be able to take it. So if you ain't in the taking business, get out the dish. That's the Holy Ghost. Get out the dish business. We've got to learn how to forgive and ask for forgiveness, but then we've got to be able to forgive those who have messed up and made mistakes. That's what a loving church
church is about. Except I don't care what y'all have done. I don't care what happens. I don't care. It's nothing. I don't think anything else I can learn. There's nothing you can say that will make me think any differently about you. Because I understand the frailty of men and of man. And there's some people who don't want to come to Calvary because they don't want me to know. Because they want me to think they're still perfect. I ain't never thought you were perfect in the first place. You miss somebody. I ain't never thought you were perfect because I ain't perfect. And all the imperfect people put your hands together because she knows that you're not perfect. I'd never be a deacon now. You weren't even being considered. And the third and finally, it is powerfully contagious. It's a personal conversation. It's the posture of every Christian. And it's powerfully contagious. Touch everybody. I know y'all don't like to, but touch somebody because you're contagious. Touch somebody because you're contagious. Touch somebody because you're contagious. It is powerfully contagious. He says, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Help me, somebody. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. That's the first thing they say. The second thing that happens is a conversation between two thieves. One thief says, hey, man. I heard you got all power. Hey, man, I heard what you done for Jairus' daughter. I heard what you did for Peter's, Simon's mother-in-law. I heard that you can turn two sardines and five hush puppies into a seafood buffet. I know, God, I know you got some Crown Royal in your pocket. One thing you got to do is think about it, Crown Royal and Hennessy. I have a flashback. But, Papa, I know you got somebody. Hey, nah, no, but they close on Sundays. I know that you got power in your hands, and I know because you got power, not only can you get off this cross yourself, but when you get yourself off this cross, get me off too. So why don't you use your power to blink and to be a genie and get us all off this cross so we can live. But the other man heard him say, Father, forgive them, for they know what they do. And the other man says, I know what I've done. And everybody up in here, you know what you have done. I don't know what you have done. I don't need to know what you have done. But all of us up in here done something. It might not work for you, but I think it's going to work for me. All of us up here have done something. And all of them said, I know what we have done. I know we deserve death. But Lord, when you come in your kingdom, and that's when you get when right there. That's when he went right there. He said, I don't really know who you are, but Lord. He was actually telling him who he was by calling him Lord. And anyone who calls on the name of the Lord shall be saved. And so he looks at the one who heard him say, Father, forgive. And says, if he can forgive them for doing something to him who has done no wrong, then surely, somebody say, surely, surely he can forgive me. And I wish I had a witness up in here that said, I know I haven't done everything I'm supposed to do. I know I'm still holding a grudge. This day, the Lord is blessing me. Not tomorrow.